NBA previews continuing today, and we are moving on to the Brooklyn Nets, and we're talking with beat reporter of Clutch Points and host of Locked On Nets, Eric Slater, with us here again this year. Eric, how are we doing today?
Doing really well, man. We got the NBA season around the corner, media day, training camp about to get going, so I'm ready to rock.
Yeah, it's prime time right now here for us NBA honks, I guess. Tell me a little bit, first of all, on the Nets side of things. Always like to start with last year, and certainly maybe the Nets were looking to do something, maybe get a number one pick, and that didn't necessarily happen. So I guess, what were the takeaways from last year there, Eric?
Yeah, I think it was ultimately a disappointing outcome because, you know, last season was about two things, you know, player development and securing a top draft pick, and it was really more about the latter because there weren't a ton of players on last year's roster you necessarily envision as long-term pieces. And, you know, the Nets got out to a slow start, a fast start, you know, in regard to their record, but a slow start in regard to the tank standings, and they fell behind the eight ball kind of with a 10-11 start to the year, and they were really never able to recover from that. They finished with the sixth best lottery odds, still had a chance to make a jump, you know, up into the top three of the draft, and, you know, the ping pong balls didn't fall their way. They fell to the eighth pick, and they had a historic draft that, you know, sets them up for this season and a season where I think there'll ultimately be some pressure to maybe maximize their draft pick more so than they did last year.
Yeah, they end up with five of the top 27 picks, and I know there was a lot of criticism on these picks. They thought, you know, some people thought maybe they should have, you know, combined those, try to move up a little bit, and some people just didn't like the picks. I mean, what were your takeaways on these picks? I mean, you can run them down one through five if you like, but what were your overall takeaways?
Yeah, I mean, my expectation, like many other people entering the draft, was that the Nets were going to consolidate. I mean, they had four first-round picks, and when they had four first-round picks, people thought that they were going to consolidate. Then they traded for a fifth first-round pick, and at that point, it was like, okay, they're gearing up to move up and do something in the draft. But then that didn't come to fruition. I know I did reporting before the draft that they were inquiring with teams in the top five, you know, the Hornets, the 76ers, and the Spurs. They talked to all those teams, but none of those teams ended up trading back. And then you look at the trade, you know, the teams that did trade up, there were very few, but, you know, like the New Orleans Pelicans traded up and gave up, you know, to move up 10 spots from, you know, the 20s to the teens, they gave up an unprotected 2026 first-round pick, which a lot of people, you know, really criticized them for. So the price was very high, it seemed like, to move up in this draft, and Nets weren't able to do it, and they stick, and they, you know, have an NBA record five first-round picks. And you know, there's been a lot of criticism. You know, Yegor Jeoman at number eight was their first lottery selection since 2010. And I understand the criticism. Like, there are concerns about Jeoman's game, but, you know, it's not too difficult to tell the story of, you know, what the Nets were probably looking at. This is a 6'9" guy who's regarded as the best passer in the draft. Although he struggled shooting at BYU, he reportedly, you know, shot the cover off the ball in all of his pre-draft workouts, and he shot really well at Summer League. So they like his versatility. And then, you know, they picked two other ball handlers in Nolan Schroeder and Ben Seraph. They also get Drake Powell and Danny Wolfe, a wing and a big man. But, you know, it seems like in this draft they were really going for high feel, you know, pass first, high IQ guys. They were taking a lot of dart throws and high upside guys. They were really prioritizing, you know, size, positional versatility. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of criticisms of this draft, but it'll be some time before we know. And ultimately, as the Nets, you know, taking some swings on guys that they felt could really, you know, have some upside down the line.
Of course, another big part of the offseason for the Nets was, you know, trading Cam Johnson to the Nuggets, getting a Michael Porter Jr. and a 2032 unprotected first-round pick. And, you know, I think there's been a lot of speculation and, you know, when and where is Cam Johnson going to go? How are they going to maximize, you know, his value? What were your thoughts on the trade? And then, you know, obviously Michael Porter Jr. coming over, we all of a sudden have a new guy that we'd never seen before when it comes to media tours. He's been off the chain.
Yeah, I like the trade. I mean, there's been kind of the opinions on that deal have kind of been all over the board. Like, I remember Bill Simmons for the Nets said that it was one of the worst trades of the last decade, which I thought was very strong, and I pretty strongly disagree with. Because, you know, you look at the deal, you know, I never really thought, you know, the Nets were reportedly looking for two first-round picks for Cam Johnson, you know, leading up to the trade deadline last year. And I didn't think that they were going to get a premium pick, you know, a premium draft asset for him, especially if they were going to get two. Those would probably be lower picks, you know, protected picks. And they come away with an unprotected 2032 Denver first rounder in that trade. which is, you know, far better of an asset than I thought that they were going to get for Cam Johnson, because, you know, the Nuggets are kind of going all in to surround Nikola Jokic right now. They've spent all their draft capital. They're paying a lot of guys a lot of money. In 2032, Nikola Jokic will be 37 years old. We have no idea where that team is going to be. So that pick unprotected can, realistically, you could see it being a top five pick. You know, you don't know, but it has that kind of upside. And then they get Michael Porter Jr., who is obviously a salary dump from the Nuggets, but is a player who, while I don't think is as good as Cam Johnson, I think he's, you know, he's pretty close. He's in the same tier for sure. And he's also 2 years younger than Cam. So the money, the extra money that he's making really isn't too much of a concern for the Nets, because they're rebuilding. They have the cap space these next 2 years. And when that contract expires, you know, in 2026, 2027, they could either flip him in a trade for a star, they could look to move him in another kind of deal, or they could look to extend him on a better value deal. And he's a guy that could perceivably fit their timeline more so than Cam Johnson could, being 2 years younger. So I think they got a player in a similar tier to Cam Johnson who I think could be flippable and could fit their timeline if they want to keep him. They also got a premium draft asset that, you know, they probably will look to, you know, shop in trades down the line when they go star hunting again. And I think it's a pick that a lot of teams will have a lot of interest in. So I think that they did well in the deal.
Eric Slater again, Brooklyn Nets beat reporter, Clutch Points, host of Locked On Nets, joining us in our latest NBA preview on the Brooklyn Nets. Other, you know, offseason stuff, some re-signings, De'Ron Sharp, Cam Thomas, Zaire Williams. I'm going to get to Thomas here in a little bit. Also acquired Haywood Highsmith and Terrence Mann in trades with the Heat and Hawks, respectively. I mentioned, you know, going back to Cam Thomas, kind of just hanging out there for a while. Eventually, they do agree to a deal. And when you look at what the you know, all of this as a whole, when you look at what the Nets are trying to do this upcoming year and what Cam Thomas is probably trying to do, I mean, what is a good over under on shots per game for him this year, Eric?
Conservatively I'd set it at like 20. he's gonna take a lot of shots. He always takes a lot of shots. You know, it's a really interesting situation with Cam, because he obviously wasn't able to get a deal done with the Nets. They reportedly offered him a 1 year deal and a 2 year deal, and the amount wasn't where he wanted it to be, and he signs his 1 year, $6 million qualifying offer and will be an unrestricted free agent next summer. And when free agents sign that qualifying offer, restricted free agents, that almost always is the end of their time with the team. They rarely, I think there's like one case in the last 10 years of a player signing the QO and then returning to the team the following season in free agency, following off season. So, you know, Cam's days are likely numbered, and that really puts him in an interesting position, because the Nets don't have too much incentive to play him and feature him, given he's probably going to move on in unrestricted free agency next summer. But he also is trying to, you know, increase his market during a contract season. So the goals there, you know, the only incentive the Nets really would have to feature him would be, you know, to probably trade him, but he has a no-trade qualifying offer. So it's a really interesting situation. I fully expect Cam to come in and, you know, try to play well, try to be invested, because that's what's, you know, that's in his best interest financially, you know, for the coming offseason. But I do think as the season progresses, we're going to see maybe their goals, you know, the Nets and Cam's goals kind of running counter to each other, and I wouldn't be surprised if that culminates in a trade ahead of the deadline.
Yeah, I would think also, you know, when you look at this, Eric, this is probably a number of guys on this roster that, you know, could be, you know, in the mix when it comes to trade conversations. Now, I guess, could you speak to that a little bit and who you feel the Nets could try to maximize when it comes to that?
Yeah, I think there's a few guys. The most likely guy, you know, outside of Cam, I think would be Haywood Highsmith, who the Nets acquired in a salary dump for from the Miami Heat. They got a second-round pick alongside him. And he's a guy who's coming off a meniscus surgery but should be ready to play by, you know, sometime in, you know, maybe mid-November, so early in the season. And if he can come back from that injury, you know, he's on an expiring contract. Is an older guy who has been a rotation player that's been in the playoffs the last few years, went to the finals with him in the rotation there. So if he can play well and come back from that injury as an expiring contract, I think the Nets could flip him at the deadline and maybe get another second-round pick or something along those lines. If you're talking about a player who's going to have, you know, real trade value, Nick Claxton is probably the likeliest guy. You know, he's going to be 27 this coming season. He is still young enough to be a part of the next iteration, but also they have De'Ron Sharp behind him, who they just re-signed, had a career-best season last year. They drafted Danny Wolfe. You know, they've traditionally been able to find centers through the draft and, you know, get those guys on rookie contracts. So I wouldn't be surprised if Nick is traded this season or if he's on the trade market and the Nets look to see what they can get for him. But he's on a pretty, you know, big contract. He's making $25 million, but it's descending into the final 2 years after this. So it could look a more attractive in the back end and be easier to move. So I'm not convinced, but if you're looking for a guy who doesn't necessarily fit the Nets timeline anymore and could perceivably fetch them, you know, a real return on the trade market, he's the guy that I would definitely be looking at.
All right, when it comes to the Nets, I believe I read something where they have an opportunity, a chance to set an NBA record as the youngest team in the history of the NBA, and so certainly that doesn't necessarily portend major expectations, goals, but there are goals at the end of the rainbow here. There's no Cooper Flag on the other side of that, but when it comes to a successful season, Eric, what would that be for the Nets?
Yeah, I think like last year, the Nets really have two objectives this season. One is developing players, which is going to be much more important than last year because they have five rookie first-round picks, the most in NBA history. They have several other guys who are, younger guys on the roster who they're trying to develop also. When you look at guys like Noah Clowney, Dariq Whitehead, they just traded for Kobe Bufkin. There's going to be opportunities for these guys, and they're definitely going to look to, develop them. And the second priority, which some people might argue is first, is securing a top draft pick, because everybody knows they made that trade with the Knicks. They sent out Mikal Bridges and got back, the five first-round picks and a swap. And in conjunction with that, they made the trade with the Houston Rockets, where they traded what was essentially four first-round picks to get back their 2025 and 2026 first-rounders in 2025-26 that they had sent to Houston in the James Harden trade initially. So they paid a markup and a steep price to get those picks back. And last year, they, didn't necessarily maximize that asset because they fell to the eighth pick and they only got the sixth best lottery odds. They, didn't show as much urgency as I think some fans hoped for in terms of their tank and the aggressiveness of it. And this year, they've already made moves, I think, that signal that they're going to be more aggressive in that regard. They made five first-round picks, five rookies coming in. They didn't sign any veteran point guards, so they're only going to have rookies playing point guard, and also Kobe Bufkin, who is a third-year guy who hasn't really played. So I think they're set up much more cleanly to have, a tank this season that should put them closer to the bottom of the standings. And I think ultimately developing these rookie guys and trying to get a crack at a star in this next class, a class that is perceived to be even stronger at the top with three guys in A.J. DeBancic, Cam Boozer, Darren Peterson, who could really be strong there. So I think that, player development and spiking a top draft pick, those are going to be the two goals for the coming season.
Brooklyn Nets beat reporter for Clutch Points and Locked On Nets host Eric Slater on our latest NBA preview talking Brooklyn Nets. Eric, we really appreciate the time. Thanks a lot. Enjoy the season, all right?
Anytime, man. Thanks for having me on.